Good morning, world. I am Rafael Tamayo, manager of the Oak Cliff Cultural Center, welcoming you to OC3's Frequencies, a podcast presented by us. We are a division of the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture, and I am here with our team.
Andrea Tostin, Cultural Programs Coordinator.
Iris Bechtel, Gallery Programs Coordinator.
And we, you know, we get excited to present these conversations, and today's is equally exciting because we have a wonderful artist with us. I will let our Gallery Programs Coordinator give the introduction.
Good morning, everyone, or afternoon or evening, whenever you're listening. We are here to welcome Antonio Lechuga, who currently has an exhibition titled Structures of Softness here in the OC3 Gallery, which just opened. Antonio Lechuga is a multidisciplinary artist born and based out of Dallas, Texas. He attended Southern California Institute of Architecture in Los Angeles, California, and was also a student at El Centro College in Dallas, Texas. He has exhibited work both nationally and internationally, but most previously at many regional Dallas-Fort Worth institutions, including 500X Gallery, the Geometric Mahdi Museum, Arts Fort Worth, Craighead Green, Row 2 Art, Art Room, and Love Texas Art Gallery, as well as here at both the Oak Cliff Cultural Center and the Latino Cultural Center. His work is included in private collections across the nation, and in 2022, he opened his first solo show, titled Fences, at Love Texas Art Gallery in Fort Worth. He has an upcoming solo show, woohoo, at De Chabord Gallery, where he is currently represented. Welcome, Tony, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, everybody. Yeah, it's great.
So today we're going to talk about your show here, Structures of Softness, but also about who you are as an artist, how you work as an artist, and basically about your being in the world.
Yeah, that should be fun. Yeah, I can't
yeah.
wait.
So, based on your bio that everyone just heard, right, you have an architecture background.
Yes.
And also you're a painter.
Yeah.
So can you talk us through kind of like the beginning of like architecture? And I know that you were at El Centro College, mm-hmm, kind of around the same time I was. And you did architecture programs in high school,
yeah,
correct?
Totally.
So you went off to architecture school and then decided to be a painter.
Right. Yeah, I know. I think ever since I was a child, I had always, drawn to things like that. At a certain time, I just really was interested in building, like how things worked.
Yeah.
I think that's why I went to architecture, at least the architecture program that I went to in high school. And at that point, I mean, I really loved spaces, loved creating them, and the fact that you can draw and make those things. It kind of just meshed both. I loved painting. You know, I started taking painting because I remember I was in one of the Vanguard schools here in elementary, like Sydney Lanier. The ISD, yeah. I was there, and you take so many different types of art classes, clay, sculpture, all kinds of stuff that sometimes other little like schools, local schools, don't have the chance to do. One of those was painting, and I was really great at drawing. I was really, really good, but I couldn't paint for anything. I didn't know why I wasn't painting right. It was so weird. I the oils, they just didn't mesh, and it would just get messy and muddy, and that brown muddy where it's just like too many colors. And like, I didn't know why I wasn't painting. It was just a mountain scene, and I just couldn't do it. And it always stuck with me. So I remember being at El Centro, taking almost all the art courses I could, but I mean, painting was very important to me. I really wanted to master, how the material works, right? Or at least everything. I had no idea. And that's kind of where it started, that passion, I guess, for that. I went to architecture school, of course. There was a certain point there in school where it was a very progressive institution. It was maybe more about, how you think about solving problems, mm-hmm, rather than, this is where this window goes and this is where this door goes. It was more about kind of how you understand the spaces that we live in and how it kind of informs the future of what we're supposed to be living in or what we should kind of house ourselves around. It was very almost futuristic in a sense. And there was a time, I mean, you know, we were exposed to so much. They really expanded the ideas of what the built environment was. I remember they would have, you know, certain artist talks, or they would even bring in, you know, like previous students there as well who were already in firms or created their own firms. And there was a lot of ones where they blurred the line between art and architecture. It was really, really blurry. You didn't know what it was. It wasn't a building, right? It definitely wasn't necessarily a painting, right? You know, this kind of prototypical piece hanging on a wall. But it was these experiences, these spaces, these things that you inhabit, and they were temporary, right? It was really odd, and I was just intrigued, and I knew that that's kind of what I was leaning towards. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, I mean, I was 3 years into that degree. It's a 5-year program, and I don't know if you remember 2008. That was kind of the recession.
Yes.
And I always say this, you know, that some of the first people that were really affected by recession were the students.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. on these, you know, like really, really high risky loans, you know, just trying to get what they can get with whatever. And that was me. I was one of those students. I remember going back to school, I believe that the beginning of that third year, and, you know, just ready to sign, you know, whatever financial aid stuff to, you know, get my check so that I can begin school. And them telling me, you know, that the lenders, they stopped lending. They're actually out of business. Mm. You know, find some more money, and you know, we begin school next week. So, yeah, it was nuts.
Figured out.
Yeah. We'll see you next Monday. It was wild. You know, so I had to go through that whole semester with just kind of a big question mark of how I'm going to figure this out or what I'm going to do. At the same time, I was pretty burnt out with school itself. So, I ended up just kind of stopping there at the end of that semester. Some people would ask, you know, I was like, well, why'd you drop out? I was like, I didn't drop out. I had to stop going.
Yes.
Couldn't afford it.
Yes.
You know, like I didn't get kicked out or anything like that. I just couldn't afford to keep going. So, at that point, I had been painting on my off time from school. They're at my place, and I just kind of kept going. And at that point, I made my transition back to Dallas, to Texas, and then just started painting.
Yeah.
You know, I just really just delved into it. I remember talking to a friend, one of my best friends out there, and then talking about going back and trying to get a degree. And I remember him telling me, it's like, you don't need a degree to paint, you know? And of course it's so obvious, right? And I just blew my mind. I was like, well, of course I don't, you know? I mean, you're right. I don't need a degree to paint. I don't need a degree to create, to make things,
right?
To be interested in stuff and express yourself because of those interests. So I just started doing it. So that's what happened. That's kind of just started to snowball. And it's for a long time, it was just about painting. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff, at a certain point, started to talk about space. Yes. And I was still painting space. And then it became to a point where I was painting spaces that I want to see, like things that are actual spaces that I want to create. You know, it didn't maybe have the money financially to make them, et cetera. So it was just all about like painting those things. And then, of course, you get to the point where in about 2020, where things start to materialize three-dimensionally, I started to make these models, right? Mm-hmm. These things, little by little, just started to make these things and scale up, right? To see kind of what that looks like and to how it's going to work, how it's going to get bigger. And I guess culminates now to what's hanging on the wall, mm-hmm. This large space just starting with kind of paintings themselves. So it's kind of interesting to see it that way. So
yeah, thinking about when you were talking about being in, it sounds like a really conceptual program, the architecture school that you went to, it sounds amazing.
It was great. It's amazing. Yeah. I would say, you know, you don't even have to, I would say you have to be interested in thinking.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Thinking about space and about problems.
Yes.
And if you think, if there's a lot of different people from a lot of different kind of backgrounds that go there. And I don't mean like racial backgrounds. I mean, just of course that, but I mean, just, you know, mathematicians, all kinds of weird people that just want to come and think about things in a different way.
Right.
Right. It's really, really interesting just to be there and to experience that. So,
yeah. So you mentioned the built environment, and I'm thinking about the installation that you have up right now, Structures of Softness, and thinking about, you know, how you have been in your studio, how you were painting space. So I feel like you are an artist who, you know, obviously you have that, you had that before
right.
you started at the program in California, because you talked about, you know, being a kid and wanting to, you know, very interested in like painting, but also interested in like, you know, space and the things around you. So can you talk a little bit about the concept going from, you know, those models to this built environment that you have right now? And then also maybe you can kind of start to talk a little bit about the use of the cobijas.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the models themselves, at a certain point I wanted to kind of scale up, like I said. So I actually started to create models about space, things that I was painting. So I actually took a painting and created that in this very, very thin, foam core. And from that, it was basically kind of, it wasn't in the round, right? It was just kind of something that you put on the wall. It had this kind of certain areas. It had depth, its layers, etc. At that point, I knew that I was working with things that were crossing each other. Right? At least the imagery was kind of things that were against a lot of things that were very sharp and edgy. It goes back. It's coupled. It actually is coupled. A lot of the work that I currently do, at least the focus sometimes, is things that are important to kind of what's happening now in the world, at least our political climate currently, all that stuff. The border itself, if I can jump around a bit, the border itself is very controversial. It's always been that way. Well, at least not always, at least the history of that idea, and of course specifically the U.S.-Mexican border, it's never been as controversial as it is now, I feel, at least about, you know, this versus that, mine versus theirs. It's just always been kind of a river, right? It divides a certain amount of space, but it necessarily didn't always divide nationalities or countries, whatever. Didn't divide people. I think that's where it is now. It's even more contentious. I believe it was 2016, Trump got elected. It was very, I mean, it got me angry, to be honest, to hear kind of that rhetoric about it as well, from people who've, you know, never been there, never experienced it, never understood the many layers of its own history. And it just really angered me. The idea of a line in the sand that is supposed to keep something out is naive. There's a long history in the built environment of architectural elements that work and don't work. I think one of the oldest architectural elements is a wall. The oldest before that is probably a cave, actually. They use caves as, you know, places where you live. It was, you know, places where you worshipped, too, as well. They were already built there, right? So they didn't need to build them. They would started with housing, like actual domes, and then they started to create walls to keep people out, right? Marauders, people coming in and taking things, all this kind of stuff. So, it's one of the oldest things. Now, at the same time, it's definitely one of the things that doesn't work sometimes. It works here in certain spaces when we want to divide space, you know. A restroom should have walls around it, mm-hmm. right? Let's just be honest, you know. Bedrooms as well, you know. Walls between you and the outside, right? You know, to keep elements out and, you know, anything. Those are important. But walls in maybe a built environment or in an environment for a particular purpose that's almost, I would say, unnatural,
yes.
don't work. And so now, again, there's a long history, a very, very long history of this happening. You have the Great Wall of China, huge, amazing kind of just artifact of American mm-hmm. ingenuity and just all this other stuff. But at the same time, I mean, there was a point, at least in the Great Wall of China, where it actually stops. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I believe the Mongols, they would just go around the wall. Mm-hmm. You know, so like all this effort, all this time, all these deaths, people in the Great Wall of China, almost kind of meant nothing, right? So it's strange, you know, the things that we do to keep people out when mm-hmm. they really don't work. And I feel like this work is about that, right? These pieces, these borders that we actually put up, right? It's a line in the sand, right? They designate the border as it's supposed to be. But then they actually start to build something there. And they say, it's supposed to be 15 feet tall. And if it's 15 feet tall, it's not going to keep anybody out. If it's 20 feet tall, for sure no one's going to get through it. You know, I mean, there's like video now of people just cutting through it on the bottom, you know, opening it up like a door. I mean, yeah. it's laughable to see all this stuff. Now, there's, you know, they have other types of technology there along the border. They have, you know, drones, countless, you know, people on the ground as well. There's, you know, ways that they, you know, at least keep to the rule that they want to keep to. But the idea of this horrid object is supposed to, you know, kind of signify something, it just doesn't work. There's a certain point, at least in the future, where that won't be there anymore, just like all walls. The Hadrian's Wall in England, or at least, yeah, in England, it actually divided a certain area between England and the people in the north. It's a stump now. There's yeah. certain areas where you can't even see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
The Berlin Wall is a great modern example of mm-hmm. walls not working. That came down, and they came down by the people as well. You know, I believe there was a kind of a video of Reagan saying, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, take down this wall. That was all symbolic. You know, the people
yeah.
got to that point.
Yes.
You know, and it's really interesting to see kind of those little things happening and seeing how it actually could work, how things on their own naturally come down. Mm-hmm. This is taking the wall as a divider, as a an unnatural element, and actually starting to talk about how it could help the environment or help its environment in that space. With the idea of maybe walls not working, there's a lot of walls that do work. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean there's walls that have a purpose, and people have maybe molded themselves around what that purpose is. There's the Wailing Wall. It's actually a remnant of an older building. And it currently, right now, it's a divider actually of two different types of religion. But people go there to pray. They go there. It's a very spiritual thing. It's very important. And they use it for that, right? It's not used for what it was meant for. It's used for something else. The mm-hmm. people have decided that this is important. There's another example. It's a great example. The Great Green Wall. It's currently being constructed in Africa. It's from one end of the continent to the other. It's cross-country as well. And they're actually just reseeding trees, mm-hmm. right? There's a certain desert there. It's just kind of taken over everything. And they're actually building that up. Now, it's not a built wall, but the idea of this thing here in the middle of something that's supposed to separate and divide, that's beautiful, mm-hmm. you know? So like I said, there are things that work. There are ways that it can work. But it's definitely not the way it's working now. So I feel like what's happening here is a place, or at least a time for people to come. The current wall actually divides. This is supposed to bring people together. Mm-hmm. That's that intention. Now, as far as maybe the cobijas are concerned, I was really, when I was starting to scale up, I started to think about maybe a skin, a type of something that wraps. Early on, with the smaller sculptures, I started using jeans, mm-hmm. right, with certain different variances of color, from like a white jean to a full-on black dark, right? So you can see the whole spectrum of color, just to try to think about maybe kind of color and space and pushing. When I started to scale up, jeans wouldn't work. That idea wouldn't work. And I really, at the same time, I wanted something that was important, and it was actually talking about, or it's from the region that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. Something from that specific region. Cobijas themselves are very, very regional, right? They're, you know, something that's found in Mexican American households as well. They're actually the beginning of them were found in San Marcos, mm-hmm. In Mexico. So I mean, those are very, very, very important. At least along that region, they're very, very tied to a certain type of healing, a type of comfort, a type of just strength, really, that you wouldn't associate strength with, I feel. So I thought that, at least as soon as I scaled up, I knew that that was a perfect thing to wrap it with. It just made sense at that scale, number one, but of course with the idea that I was trying to work with. It's really taking something from that area, and it's using it for this thing in that area, right? So it's wrapping against this thing that needs comfort, right? Because it's not working, mm-hmm. right? So it's taking this healing nature of this object, and it's using it on something else that needs it. And it, at the same time, it brings people together as that product, right? Mm-hmm. At least the hope is that it brings mm-hmm. people together. So in a nutshell, I guess, in the end, right? After that long-winded answer, that's the goal, at least for this project, or this what I'm working with right now. So,
yeah, I have watched people, especially when we've been really busy and had events in the evening. And you talked about, you know, whenever we were talking about your work and during, you know, installation, and this idea of like the cobijas, the blankets being like this kind of warm, inviting, and they are, please don't touch the art, y'all, but, people almost want to, like, I see them and they almost want to like lean up,
right,
and lay their backs against it. And I think that was successful in like what you were trying to achieve. And I think it's important to note too, that when you were thinking about the installation, you wanted to put the structure on the wall rather than have it kind of in the space where it would serve as a kind of like wall or border. Right. And so it becomes something different in the gallery, because it is up against the white wall of correct. The gallery.
Yeah, totally. I think like the space is a great space. If you haven't been here before or seen it, definitely have to check it out. It's an amazingly large space, and it can be daunting, at least as an artist, to, you know, hey, feel all the walls kind of thing. But I felt like, you know, when we had talked about the exhibition, I had already had pieces up. Mm-hmm. When we came into the studio visit, and they were all along on both sides of my space, and for us it just made sense. Now, I really, considering the space as you walk in, it's longer than it is wide, and I think I really wanted to kind of enhance the idea of kind of this tangible thing and bringing people in and bring people to the thing itself. I felt like it definitely had to go along that wall itself. It really had to bring people in, right? Mm-hmm. Something you can kind of look at from the distance, which of course you can.
Yes.
To admire maybe the composition or the colors itself, it as a whole. But I feel like to really understand it has to be further away to bring you in, mm-hmm. right? That's kind of the intention. Versus, you know, something that in the middle, which, again, you could still be talking the same thing, but you start to talk about it in a different light. And at least currently, I really wanted to focus on mm-hmm. kind of that healing space, that healing nature of it. So I feel like it, it's definitely mm-hmm. working the way it is right now against the wall. So
you talked about your experience in when you went to California and learning about art and architecture and blurring the line. And I find it really fascinating having experienced your work earlier on and then getting to know you and seeing like the journey that you've taken and then seeing how structured you are as an individual, even in the way that you talk. And I remember in the studio visit when Iris and I went and you had formulas and you had, you know, the 3D models and right. all of these things. And it was the way you explained your experience in California and your interests in regards to how you created your process. Like, I can't think of a better reflection in terms of, like, the work that you have in there now. And I'm not saying that just because it's at OC3 and it's a really cool show. Yeah. But all of these things that you're saying, you know, and Iris mentioned that you were successful in some of these things that you intended to do. But, you know, for blurring the line, you created some really strong lines. You created a sense of warmth with this, you know, really large structural piece that does cover a person and they feel covered and warm when they walk into that space. And it's all layered with so many things that you are either really making some comments on or that you experienced. And I will say that initially I wouldn't take it as a like an overtly political statement, sure. but I do think that, you know, you don't have to be correctly political when you articulate totally. Some of your feelings, but you do a really the way some people I would say that, you know, the way I connect with your work, all of those things that you're talking about come up. So I applaud the way that you kind of created this multi-layered and nuanced statement with so many things tied in to a really great show here.
Right. No, I thank you all. I appreciate that. It's, you know, I just really, it's strange. I just really like thinking about like a problem. It's strange. like, I don't know, you know, when you're showing or you're trying to make things for, you know, a show or, it's just, there's so much. I like the research part of everything, kind of the background, how things start to make, all that stuff is fun to me. Just like digging in and being curious about things and seeing how things work or how they used to work, maybe how they work now and how they maybe can work in the future. To how we can make things better, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not duplicate wrong things as well. I really like to kind of make things too, like actually try to think about inventing things for the better. I don't know what that looks like in the future for me, maybe industrial design. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I really am interested in kind of history and how that plays a part in how we maybe make more history.
Mm-hmm.
That's, for me, the process is huge. I research. I try my best to really just delve into everything and understand things before I start to express myself about things. So it's really important, you know, just to kind of, at least for you as a person, as an artist, to be informed. So I try my best, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're answering questions as soon as they pop in my mind. So this is just fantastic. I want to say congratulations on being one of the Nasher Grant recipients. Right. Is there anything that you can tell us about that grant is going to fund for you?
Yeah. Let's see. So it was actually a great week. Installing and for this show as well, and then kind of receiving that news, extremely excited, you know. So of course the Cobijas themselves, I've been working for a long time, specifically with this show, kind of creating these, wrapping these things. They've always been used, you know, in that kind of that form to wrap. They've never been kind of taken out of context or used as a material that I can take from, right? So currently with the grant, I'm going to cut out actual flowers. I've actually found It's strange, you know, I've gone to go purchase these things so many times, and I feel like
they know you.
Yeah, yeah, they know me for sure. Yeah, yeah, I actually have a card with one of the wholesalers where, you know, I'm a wholesaler myself. I have a card with them, so I get discounts. I didn't know they had things like that at like those places, but I've come to find there's like four categories of designs for cobijas. Mm-hmm. One is religious iconography. Mm-hmm. It'd be, you know, the Virgen de Guadalupe. Mm-hmm. I've never found a Jesus as well. I don't know what that is. I don't know why, you know, and there's no idea or there's no picture of God either, I guess. So I don't know.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to never think of all Jesus. The ones I've seen. I've seen the one of like the angels.
Angels. The, yeah. There's a lot of Virgens. Yeah. A lot of different kind of designs for that as well. Mm-hmm. The second one would be animals. Mm-hmm. And very specific type of animal. There's not going to be any penguins or any bunny rabbits. Like they're very tigers. Machismo mm-hmm. depictions of animals. They're deers kind of laying down in the forest, lions and tigers, right? And then you'll have like an eagle, right? Like it's like very, very, very strong ideas of what an animal is. Or a horse too, which is like very cowboy, right? So so there's those two. There's a third one, which is designs. Patterns, beautiful patterns as well with colors, etc. And then the fourth one is actually flowers. I don't know why, but they're actually really quite beautiful the way they're composed and the composition, the colors of them as well. I don't know why the fourth one is flowers, but I've always saw them there as well, and they're really beautiful, the colors. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess this all ties into kind of what happened to me. And this kind of why this show was postponed last year, everything. I mean, I was shot last year, as you all know, over a year ago, July 15th, shot twice in the abdomen, and long recovery. A lot of the times I would get, you know, flowers themselves. You offer flowers at the hospital for someone, get well soon. They're always for the person. Right, even during maybe a funeral as well, always for the person and never for the people that are around them, the people that are just as affected. I would be there on my hospital bed, and you know, and then, you know, my parents or my mom would be on this like really horrible hospital chair/bed, horrible, right, really uncomfortable. So it's like it's always the care is always for the person themselves and never for the people around them that just cares just as much, or that person cares for even more so, right? So for me, that always kind of stuck with me, the idea of flowers for someone else and not for the people themselves too as well, like the kind of the inclusion of everyone. Last year, there were 647 deaths from mass gun violence, right? So kind of mass shootings in Texas, right? That's the second highest number in the past 7 years alone. Not just in Texas, I'm sorry, the nation, sorry about that. The second highest number in the past 7 years alone. That is very hard to take. We all should be ashamed of that as a nation. It's horrible that I'm starting to talk about this right in the work. But I think at the same time, I think it's important to talk about this stuff. I'm actually starting to look at all these flowers and I started to cut them out. And basically compose all these various flowers and different from different cobijas into this large expansive bouquet. Now this bouquet is it's an offering, much like a cobija is an offering. It's offering of healing. They're very tangible, they're very soft, they're very warm. I'm basically cutting all these things out, composing them a certain way, and kind of stitching them all together. It's going to be this very, very long piece. And essentially, it's for the families of these victims. Right? It's for the other people who have to live without their people, really. I mean, that's what it's for, right?
Really, so I don't want to talk too much about the experience that you had with getting shot. And if anyone is interested, there's you know, they've written stories on it. You know, talk to Tony. Yeah, it's fairly well documented. Yeah. I think as a reflection of your artistry, that experience that you went through the commentary you're making on walls and borders and this idea of, I mean, just, I haven't had as much of a direct relationship with working with you as an artist, but you sort of broaden this idea of who you are, and you're very much a community involved person. You're making these statements, you're creating this work, but you're opening your arms to say, you know, like, say these things so that the world understands that you're working for your community. You're making these offerings, you're talking about the issues and all of these things. In terms of impact with the experience that you went through, I'm really interested in finding how you kind of how you develop that message of, man, I went through this experience where I got shot, and now, you know, I'm making this statement about this really methodical process that I've developed over the past several years into something that needs, you know, voices in support of, or, you know, in protest of, in my particular way, and really refining and fine tuning that message. Can you kind of explain? It's hard to frame this as a question, because it's like you have this firsthand experience, but right, you're making this really broad but very specific kind of comment on things. And again, it's like, if someone walked into the OC3 gallery, they wouldn't necessarily immediately respond with, oh, this is a comment about border walls, right? And so with this multi-layered and heavily nuanced kind of approach that you take, what is it that you go through and kind of the back and forth of this messaging that you arrive to?
Right, yeah. I feel like sometimes I just try to maybe stay on point, or at least focused. Mm-hmm. It's, you're right, there's a lot of different layers, a lot of different things that we're talking about sometimes. It's always kind of trying to look back and kind of pull back to kind of that main point. With what happened to me, you know, a lot of it was about recovery in the beginning. I couldn't do anything unless, I mean, there was a point where I believe the first 2.5 months I was there, I think I got up from the bed and walked maybe 10 minutes five times in two and a half months. So a lot of it was just about getting up, you know, making sure I can be a person and walk, right? I had a lot of problems, a lot of issues, a lot of everything with my, you know, body inside. That was a big part of me still staying there. A lot of complications. There was a couple of things, you know, I missed out on the show, at least at that time. Other opportunities that I found out arose that I couldn't be a part of. That stuff angered me, right? The fact that I couldn't do the things that I wanted to do, the things I had planned, the things I'd live for, right? Because this is my life, you know. Being an artist is my life. And I couldn't do those things. That really angered me, to know that those things are taken away, right, by something that happened. I'm back now, right? I'm back where I'm supposed to be, at least health-wise. I'm one kidney less, kidney disease, all that stuff. But I'm where I am, I'm lucky. You know, technically, I should be dead. From what I've been told, should be dead. So that really plays a part in just a certain amount of just will to talk about these things. Obviously, you know, it affected me, right? Like, gun violence affected me. So I remember last year before my first show, just after a week after my first show, there was a mass shooting at Robb Elementary in Uvalde, mm-hmm. right? That really hit home. Someone I know, they wrote an article about the show and about the connection between kind of the material itself and the children, you know, that are around there. It just really hurt and hit home. Very serious. Just a couple months ago in Allen, Texas, right? Mm-hmm. The shooting in the mall area there. So this stuff, you know, it keeps coming back, you know, and it's just stuck in my head, you know, and I have to pull it out, you know. It's just too much, you know. I just can't not talk about it sometimes, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And especially with the fact that, you know, it happened to me too, right? I should be here. I shouldn't be here, I'm sorry. But I am now. I think I talked to Iris earlier, maybe last month, and I was trying to find a word for the, like, what I was trying to do, or at least the why. And I don't know if I'm working through all this itself, myself as a victim of something like that. But I think it was either penance or repentance. Mm. So I don't know if it's either one of those two right now, or if it's not any of those two. I'm trying to figure that out. But I feel like I need to give back to the people who don't have the people around anymore, right? I feel like I need to do that. So this is the beginning of that conversation. I hope that it can be that healing, or at least an additional type of healing for some people. If it's the beginning of an idea of healing, just help in some way. If it's successful, it should be extremely beautiful. But at the same time, it's not going to be a beautiful idea. Mm. Right. And I think that's a part of it. Right. So a lot of people would walk into it assuming that, oh, this is amazing. It's really beautiful. It's so soft and, you know, all this other stuff. But that's a huge part of it. Right. It's like you're looking at these people.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not around anymore for a specific purpose. They didn't just die on their own, natural causes, et cetera, old age. They died for a reason. Like, that's horrible, you know? And so just to see those two contrast and to clash, I think that's really going to have a certain weight, and it should have a certain weight, right? It's about this ongoing tragedy that we still have. So, yeah, I don't know. I hope it works. I really do hope it is successful. So, got serious.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm just like, you know, again, you know, going back to this, everything that's going on and really incorporating that in, you know, in terms of experiences and individual community, this social component of your work and all of these things. It is a lot to take in. It's tough.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we have to start talking at some point, you know, even if it's maybe the wrong answers or, you know, maybe we're thinking about the wrong thing. We have to start talking about something, right? We actually start doing something, right? So, you know, I feel like some of the times, you know, as artists, you know, either we talk about things or we don't, you know, and that's okay if we don't. There's no rules, right, to this thing. But just for me, it just hit me at a certain point, and you just have to, I just have to, you know, I have to take these things on whichever way that I can. You know, right now it's with this. I don't know what the next thing is, but I know that, you know, for sure it's something that I need to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm talking about a lot of different things, and I really do hope that it comes off like all in one package.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's kind of the hope. Because a lot of people come in, again, you know, they'll come in, you know, of course, not knowing maybe the intention, the idea, everything behind it as well, and that's expected. It's perfectly fine, you know. But I really do hope that people come in, maybe read the artist statements as well, and kind of take all that in, like, little by little. I mean, again, very beautiful things, but they're talking about a very, like, hard subject, you know, and that's kind of the soft part of it all, right? These structural things. These pieces, like the bed, the cobija bed,
yeah,
it's a very, like, it's a part of our kind of human structure, like what we surround ourselves with, right? A lot of the times, like for some people, you know, their entire household kind of revolves around resting, right? I mean, that's what home is sometimes, you know. So that bed, it's the beginning portion of, it's where you sleep, it's where you die sometimes. It's where people have given birth, right? So it's where everything happens, where you know do stuff. Other stuff, right? So it's all kinds of things all in one, and that's where that thing lays. It's a very vulnerable place, and that's where cobijas lay. Mm-hmm. They lay in that vulnerability, and we surround ourselves with those things, those softness, those. But at the same time, there's a certain amount of strength too that we give it. So, you know, a certain armor, right? When we have those things on us and we feel protected, you know? I feel like taking those things there from that bed to the wall, right? To that actual thing, to surround it with these ideas, surrounding it with these ideas of softness and structure and security, and to see kind of what happens. I think that's where we are right now. Yeah. So, yeah.
When I think about the title, kind of going back to the title, Structures of Softness, I think about not just the physicality of the softness, but a sort of, it's sort of like you're compelling us to a softening with one another and within how we are in the world. Like, let's soften. Let's just soften a little bit so that we can begin to understand each other and hear each other. And I think, you know, that's part of like maybe how you're, or how we as humans can get through these kinds of traumatic, tragic experiences, right? Is the only way to that is a softening, is a vulnerability, like you're speaking about. And so I think, for me anyway, that's my experience with the work. And then, you know, hearing you talk about it, that's kind of like, you know, kind of continues that thinking in my mind about how I see and experience your work.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah, no, for sure. We're definitely trying to find that, pull everything out of that into a title.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah, no, you know? It's the perfect title.
I thank you.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah, I mean, I was struggling for a bit just to figure the right one out.
As we all do.
Yeah, it's hard, you know, to find a title, not just for your works, but then like for the exhibition. So
yeah,
I'm glad that it makes sense in that, you know, in that realm. It's definitely important to talk about those. I think you said it perfectly, to be quite honest, as far as maybe the intention of the title and what it means as a whole. Of course, just the physicality part. Apart from that, for sure, but at the same time, it plays towards kind of vulnerability, right? Right, the idea of kind of this call for kind of softness, right? Or this call for a different type of force, right? That, you know, may work, has worked, right? In the past, all this, everything else, right? A different idea of kind of security. So I think, because when you think of security, you do not think of softness, right? But it's almost taking softness as strength.
Yeah.
Right. And that is just as strong as maybe kind of a certain type of material. Right. Kind of the idea is just as strong. Right. Where they say the pen is mightier than the sword kind of thing.
Yeah.
That thing as well. Yeah. So, yeah. Thank you. That's important. I'm really happy the way that title came out. So,
yeah. Oh my God. I'm thinking of so many things now. Like
good.
When you're talking, I'm like thinking about how the body is both soft and strong at the same time. It's both vulnerable and you know, impenetrable
right,
at the
yeah.
same time.
Totally, yeah. It's always fighting. You know, I with everything that happened, you know, I found out that, you know, just in my own kind of on my own, that the body is always, always fighting.
Yes.
I think you spoke before we started about you know, relative. Yeah. The body is always fighting. Even when it's healthy, it's fighting to be healthy.
Yeah.
You know, it's wild when you think of it that way. And it's always fighting for you. And it's so wild in that sense.
Yeah.
I think it's so cool. But then you cut and then it's like blood just everywhere. It's just nuts. You know what I mean? Paper cut is just horrible. It's like, you know, it's weird.
Yeah.
How all that works. So, yeah, I agree. It's a lot to think about. So I like what happens when, like, shows happen, the product of that, of just kind of taking it in and kind of decompressing afterwards and then seeing so much coming out. So, yeah, it's huge.
A question, I mean, it's kind of related, but I guess on a different angle. And I'm bringing this up because somebody had asked me over the weekend.
Oh, cool.
They weren't able to make the show. Yeah, but it was just like,
no.
They were like, so can you buy any of it? And
oh,
so,
wow. Cool.
Well, no, okay. And no, but I mean, let's obviously, no. You know, it made me think of like, this idea of the art industry or art market, this consumerism obsession with, well, this artist made something and me here, I'm supposed to be able to buy it and make it mine. Mm. And I don't really get that kind of vibe from, like, I don't get that intention. I'm not saying that, you know, it's
all work is for sale, by the way.
Yeah, but I don't get the, like, with your work, it's very much, for me, it's like message over the money. You know what I mean?
Right, no, for sure.
Obviously.
Yeah.
What are your...
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is definitely about a specific subject. Like I said, all work is always for sale, I would say. I mean, I feel like as artists, we have to sustain ourselves.
Right.
You know, that's the idea.
Very much.
You know, we definitely make for kind of certain reasons, that's important to us, but all that, those reasons have value.
Yes.
Right. And in that sense, it's monetary as mm-hmm. well. You know, the lights got to turn on.
Yeah, exactly.
Those
yeah.
bills got to be paid.
Capitalism.
Yeah. Capitalism yes. you know, it's horrible. You know, yeah. It sucks, but we got to play a part. We have to, you know, if we don't, we won't be around. We can't express ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
So, in the sense of this exhibition itself, it's definitely about the idea, mm-hmm. you know, foremost. It's built a certain way. It's actually built in 8 different sections.
Mm-hmm.
The only, like, it's not just kind of one very long fence that you bring in through the door and then just kind of throw against the wall.
8 sections?
8 very large sections. So they're 7 feet wide, the sections themselves. I believe mm-hmm. the whole thing is 89 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
Or, no, 56 mm-hmm. feet long. It should have been 89 feet
and
long.
And it's modular, like it's in pieces.
Correct.
Like if you
yes.
were to go to IKEA and get like something. It's not IKEA. It's, I'm not saying it's
an definitely IKEA. Can't find it at IKEA. Don't go
but,
online.
You know, yeah. just to get people like understanding, right. like it's something you can take apart and put together.
Exactly right. Yeah, it's yeah. extremely modular. Some of the pieces themselves are like universal, so they can be moved around to certain places. The composition of it, of course, the guijas themselves, it's intentional, at least as far as kind of what where this one's supposed to be color-wise. But it's made to where it can be moved around. And that's just a part of maybe kind of how it holds together, how it's constructed. I think of them like bricks in a wall.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of maybe a brick as a building unit, it can be used in different places, different ways, sideways, long ways that they use bricks, maybe diagonally too, to create patterns. Yeah, it's all kinds of different. If you think of maybe those V's as that, then they can be used in different kind of instances, different areas, different places. Mm-hmm. So that really helped with maybe the building portion of it, or at least how it's going to be constructed. So it's in 8 different sections. They're 7 feet wide, each section. There's 3 Vs. It's 3 Vs. It's one section. And, you know, in theory, you know, if I would love for this show to travel to kind of experience other spaces, number one. But at the same time, you know, to broaden that message to other areas, not just Texas, but, you know, possibly beyond. So with that, I mean, to be quite honest, I mean, one section can come down to fit maybe another space, mm. right? So that is kind of the hope, right? So I thought about it maybe not only just fitting here, but how would it fit in other places, and still kind of holding on to that idea of the show itself. So yeah.
I think you were able to meet our intern, Melanie, when they were here.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking about certain pieces of the structure where it was like, oh, I recognize this. Mm. Oh, I recognize that. But it also wasn't like, I didn't see the Virgen's face. I didn't see the Virgen's hands, right? And it's like, we know the patterns mm-hmm. and we created the image that we saw from our experience in the wall based on everything. So,
totally.
Yeah. And in terms of, obviously, I'm, you know, you're very intentional with your work. I think I just find it interesting, again, going back to like the consumer part of it and making sure that that you're able to keep on with creating this kind of work. Where would you sit with someone looking to acquire your work that you might not necessarily be aligned with?
That's a good question. That's a hard question for like all artists.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I don't know. You guys want to take that? No. Is there a pass anywhere? I have no idea. I've never, Oddly enough, I've never had that experience yet. So
let's hope you don't.
I don't know. I don't know how you answer right. that question. I would definitely hope that these things are valued mm-hmm. by people if they wanted to maybe acquire, you know, something from me. I would hope that they would value it enough to value me as well, and my background, who I am, too. I think that's important.
Of course, you know? Yeah.
And just as well, I mean, that's important when someone wants to buy your work. You know, I mean, they are looking at you and your piece. But at the same time, you should think about who they are sometimes. I mean, it's actually really hard. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know
that
answer.
We've had similar conversations in the past where we talk about, well, you know, I personally know some artists that they were like, no, I'm sorry, but I will not.
Yeah, you know, which makes sense, you know. And, I mean, there's certain people I definitely would not like sell to, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't want. At the same time, I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know how you begin to try to figure that one out, like solve that problem. That's interesting.
Capitalism rears its ugly head because right. you have to pay your bills. And yeah. like, if you want to travel your work, that's you know, true. There's, yeah. See, you know, there issues with, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to pull out a check, you know what I mean? Yeah. And there's a certain amount of zeros on there that I've never seen before. Then I don't know, you know,
yeah.
It's how do you explain that? You know, you gotta go at some point, you gotta tell your mom and your dad, like, hey, yeah. I turned down this amount of money.
Yeah.
Good luck with that one. But,
I think you have to think too about like what you could do with, like, if you sold your work to someone that you don't have, whose beliefs, you know, you're in total opposition to, you could, you know, consider, well, what could I do with, you know,
right.
what amount of good could I do with this?
See, that's actually really
and
good.
And then right. you're like turning it back on right. them, right?
Yeah, you turn it back around. No, that's I think that's part like, of the answer.
Give me those zeros.
Right. Yeah. So I agree. You know, and that's the thing. You have to think about it. Yeah. At the same time, at the end, you know, that is that, you know, there is a certain yeah. amount that you can do with it, you know, because yeah. it doesn't just go back to you. For me, it goes back to everything else that I make for everyone else, or at least the hope I make for everyone else. So that's huge. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I feel like there's good and bad problems. That's a good problem to have. Mm-hmm. Right. To figure out, you know, hey, do I take this money from this person or not? Yeah. There's a lot of times where you just got to pay your rent, you know, yeah. you know, I mean, and you do what you got to do. You know, we all do as artists. You know, we'll see. I would love to have that problem, I guess. Yeah.
So you all heard it here.
Yes.
It is for sale.
It is for sale.
So bring those zeros.
Bring the zeros,
multiple
please.
Zeros.
Multiple. That's great.
Oh, gosh. You say so many things.
I'm just enjoying hearing everything that Tony's saying. That's why I'm like, yeah, asked and answered. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Good. I hope
just,
so.
And I, everything that I've seen you create, you've been successful in your very substantive mm-hmm. concepts and messages underneath the structures of softness. We talked a little bit about, for me, makes me think of the trellises and gardens and
yes.
the growth of the community. And then, like you were mentioning earlier, with the bed in the middle, the rest and rejuvenation and replenishment. And so you're very successful in making the wall into something, transforming it into something completely different.
Thank you. I'd hope so. That it, you know, obviously that's the intention. And to bring back to the trellis, or like I've heard a lot of people call it lattice as well, which yeah. is mm-hmm. very lattice-like actually. Mm-hmm. The V, it creates a V, so the two Vs kind of on top of each other. Mm-hmm. It actually stemmed from like the idea of a residential fence. So yeah. the
yes,
the okay. The wire fence that we see all over, you know, the neighborhoods mm-hmm. that it becomes
chain-link.
Like yeah, chain link yeah, fence. Chain-link. There it is. Yeah, chain link fence. So that's where it is. That's mm-hmm. where that kind of unit is created from. And from that, I started to kind of just blow up and go big. So mm-hmm. It's very, very focused, like at least regionally or at least locally, as far as kind of where it's based off of, like that unit, right? How we understand it as a fence. So, yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate it. I really do hope it works. And I'm glad it's working, I guess. Yeah. So
I connect with your process and your work on many levels as a visual artist myself. Yeah. So, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you all. Thank you for having me.
There's nothing better than sitting down with another artist and hearing them talk about their work.
Yeah.
And then feeling a real kinship.
Mm. It's huge. Yeah. Yes. I'm glad we did this. Thank you all.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It was nice meeting your family. The reception.
Yeah. 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 They all came out.
It was nice sharing. And I bring that up because they shared a few stories about your dog.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel like I always mention your dog.
It's okay. Yeah. I briefly, at least last night, thought about bringing her. I was like, well, you know, again, it's just still the show. She'll be running around.
Oh, it would be fun.
Yeah. See, yeah. I should have brought her.
We love the dogs here. Yes.
Bring her. She would have always right here.
She would love it. She'd be looking at me like, oh my God.
I would have said, I'm not asking any questions because I'm paying attention to the dog.
No, I mean, she's amazing.
And your dog's name is again?
Chanclas.
Chanclas.
Yeah,
Chanclas.
It's hilarious.
So cute. Yeah.
No, early on she had, I got her from the pound.
Yes.
Early on she had, I forget what it's called, kennel cough.
Oh, that's right? Yeah.
Common, you know, yeah. She had basically a doggy cold.
Yeah.
You know, took to the vet and they gave her some pills and on her, you know, it has the dog name. It's pretty hilarious. I never took a dog to a vet before, but it has the name on there. It's Chanclas Lechuga, which is like the weirdest. I imagine them typing that up and be like, what the, you know? So
it's got a nice rhythm. Chanclas Lechuga.
Yeah, it is. I still have that because I don't think I'll ever see something like
it's
that.
It's kind of tough sounding too.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Chanclas Lechuga.
Yeah, no.
That'll be my warm up exercise.
There's a
Chanclas Lechuga. Chanclas Lechuga.
And Tony, if you have any passwords with your dog's name in it, please change them.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't.
Oh yeah.
Think about that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, not yet, I guess. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to bleep all of this.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Oh, cool. Well, I feel like we always run into this issue of we need to narrow it down because we could talk forever. But
well, just like if there's if you want to tell the listeners how they can find you.
Sure. Yeah, of course. You can type me into Google, of course. It's my full name, Antonio Lechuga. Let Us Look on Instagram as well. Letuslook.com as well. As far as my website, my work, CV as well. I have a TikTok, but I never have loaded anything on it. Don't know how to use it.
We don't need the TikTok.
It's hard.
We don't need it.
I have no idea.
Or the X.
I don't have an X. I don't think I do. Yeah. I don't know. I never use that either. So I just mainly just, you know, use Instagram for kind of social media, spreading information on my work, shows, etc. Mm-hmm. Memes are fun. Mm-hmm. That's about it. You know, I don't use anything else. It gets hard after a certain one. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of technology. It's a lot. Yes. It's exhausting. For an artist, a person. Yeah. You know, it's a lot. So I try to kind of minimize as much as I can. So
nice. Well, you heard it here. Tony Lechuga's Structures of Softness is up through September 2nd. So come by and see it. The gallery hours are Tuesday through Saturday, noon to 6 p.m.
That does it for us here at the Oak Cliff Cultural Center. You have been listening to OC3 Frequencies, a podcast by us. We are a division of the City of Dallas Office of Arts and Culture. Please find and follow Oak Cliff Cultural Center on all social media. You can listen to this on Spotify, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, make sure you rate us 5 stars. You want to hear something, you want to see something, let us know, reach out, contact us, DM, email, call. Hound us, but not really, because we deserve a break also sometimes. But yes, let us know. We love hearing community feedback. Again, a big shout out to Antonio Lechuga. Make sure you find and follow him, and we'll catch you here on the next one, folks. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.